Bill Simmons has started the Grantland Network.
Grantland Network.
Basically, he's rounded up some people capable of talking about sports and other stuff, too, in an entertaining way, if I were to take a guess.
This is the Grantland Network.
Welcome to the BS Report. We are in full draft mode. Just did a massive 8,000 word back and forth with Chad Ford that went up on Grantland today. We made the first 22 picks of the draft. They got mad at each other. And now, somebody who I think is involved with our draft telecast tomorrow night, Jay Billis. What's happening?
Hey, Bill. How you doing?
You're on the show tomorrow, right?
Yeah, I'm on the desk, and so I'll be pontificating my normal stuff. And I got to tell you, though, I spent the weekend in Boston, and I know that you have had a lifelong maniacal devotion to that city and its sports teams. And I went to Fenway for the first time, and bro, you have undersold that place. That was a religious experience for me. I had a blast there.
It's like going to a museum, right?
It was better than that, because you had hot dogs and beer and all that stuff. But it was,
yeah.
I got to see Euclid's last game there against the Braves.
Oh,
and,
nice.
It was a beautiful day. I mean, it was absolutely perfect. And, you know, I grew up in Los Angeles, went to Dodger games growing up, and I always thought that nothing could beat Dodger Stadium. But Fenway was, and I've been to Wrigley and all that, and Fenway is by far, the best ballpark I've ever been at. It's not close.
I agree with you, because Fenway is one of those things. I was going there so often, you stop kind of appreciating how quirky it is. And then, you know, now I get back there maybe once a year or once every 2 years, something like that. And the wall is just magnificent. It's really like there's nothing like it. Like just seeing a baseball park that has that giant wall with the seats on top of it and how intimate everything is. It's really amazing.
And I took my wife to it, and she notices. I didn't really tell her much about it other than, you know, how great I thought it would be, and it was better than I thought. And
right.
She was the one that pointed out how, you know, there were so many parents, grandparents with kids and grandkids and all that stuff, and what a kind of community generational thing it was, and it really did kind of stick out when you looked for it. It was a really remarkable experience. I was lucky to be there.
What basketball arenas would you put in that category?
You know, I'm more in the college realm, so the old pro arenas like Boston Garden and Chicago Stadium and, you know, the Forum and all that, it's so different now. And the new ones are great because the amenities are great, but like the college ones that I played in Cameron, so I'm a little biased toward that. And that to me is like a Wrigley Field type of environment, to compare it to baseball. But the one that, you know, that I didn't play in that I like the best is Allen Fieldhouse in Kansas. That's on the basketball side, that's about as close to a religious experience as you're going to get. And, I kind of likened it to, you know, it's the St. Andrews of college basketball, for me.
Right. I really liked Indiana's NBA arena when I went to the Super Bowl. I went to a game there because they built it for basketball. You know, so all of these state-of-the-art arenas are built to accommodate basketball and hockey. So the seats that are, you know, they don't totally hug the court because in hockey it's a little deeper and wider, and so seats are a little far back. In Indiana, it was like you're right on the court. I thought that was pretty neat, but
they are great, but like the baseball and college basketball thing, there's some, you know, you feel the history of the places when you're in them, and
yeah.
You can't explain it, but like, I've been in Allen Fieldhouse when there's nobody in there. I'm waiting for practice to start or something, and it's like the place talks to you, and that's the way I felt at Fenway, is you knew great things that happened there, and if they had a new ballpark, like Camden Yards in Baltimore, like I went to Memorial in Baltimore years ago, and even though Camden Yards is awesome, it's great, you have to have new ballparks, it's not the same. And Fenway can have both. They have great amenities and great sight lines and everything, but you get the history and tradition of the place too, which is, it adds to it. It's really, really cool.
Were you sobbing emotionally when Shane Battier, Duke graduate, won an NBA ring?
No, I didn't get that far. I did enjoy watching it because I'm one of those guys that really likes LeBron James. I mean, I got to know him a little bit when he was a high school player, and I thought it was really, really, at least it stuck out to me at the end when Spoelstra took everybody out and the players were kind of jumping around at the end. LeBron was kind of jumping up and waving his arms around, and that was the first time in a long time he looked really young again. He had started to look older, and that he looked like a kid again. And I thought that was kind of neat. I mean, I'm cool with everybody. If you don't like LeBron James, I'm cool with that. That's the way it goes. Like, I don't argue with people who say, I really like so-and-so. Why would I argue with somebody who says, well, I don't like this person? That's separate from how good of a player he is and all that stuff. But I happen to really like him. And so I was actually happy to see it because it was I thought it was a really neat thing. And now it seems like he'll be able to get his due where it's been in some circles kind of denied to him over the last several years.
Yeah. I wrote a column on Friday about going to that last game, and it was interesting to see him smile and be happy because I literally could not remember the last time I'd seen that guy smile. I mean, it had probably been like a year and a half, 2 years. That decision, you know, which was his fault for the most part, but I think it sapped a lot of the joy out of that guy, and you didn't really notice that until they finally won the title, and he just seemed like a happy kid again, as you said. It'll be interesting to see how that affects him going forward because, you know, I think part of the reason he succeeded so well in those last three rounds was because he just got into that Jordan homicidal mode, you know, and maybe that's what he needs to make that final leap. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, he made a point, and I hadn't heard him say this, and maybe I just wasn't paying attention, but he made the point that last year he played angry and played with hate and all that, and you know, as if that would fuel him against those that have been critical of him. And he said this year he didn't do that. And I don't know. I'm not with him every day, but you know, I tend to think that it, going forward, I'm not going to say it opens up floodgates or all that, but he can play to win now without being afraid to lose or worried about losing. And I think that he, as he's surrounded, maybe going forward with some younger players, better players, all that, I think he's got a chance to really do some special things on the championship level. Because there's nobody like him. I mean, he is. I mean, I said it when I saw him in high school. He was the best high school player I ever saw. And even though now that seems like such an easy thing to say. I got criticized at the time for saying that. One, I got people saying, "Well, what about Lou Alcindor and Oscar Robertson?" I was like, "Well, how old do you guys think I am? I never saw those guys play when they were in high school." But LeBron was better than Kobe and better than Garnett in high school because he was so much more physically imposing. And in the pros, he's been phenomenal, even before he won this year. And you add in the glow of a championship, which kind of, spotlights all the other, what people would consider failures before that. And in his first 9 years in the league, he's done things that few, if any, players have ever done and done it at an extraordinary level.
Yeah. I've been lucky enough to see a lot of, basically every player that mattered over the last 35, 40 years in person at least once. And I've been to some great games. And the game that he played against Boston in game 6 and the first three quarters of game 4 against Oklahoma City before he ended up getting the cramps and all that stuff, those were two of the best 10 games I've ever seen anyone play in person. And they were totally different games, which is what makes him so interesting. You know, in Boston, he was just assassin guy. He was just you know, scoring however he wanted, and that's how he dominated the game. And then the other game, as I wrote last week, he did a Larry Bird impersonation. Like, he's in the low post creating shots, and you know, basically he could have had 20 assists if everybody had made the shots he was getting. I just don't think anybody in the history of the league could have played those two specific different games that he played. You can't think anybody who could have done that, right?
I can't, especially the way he does it. You know, his passing, his ability to get to the rim, to post, to rebound at that level, all the different things he can do on a basketball floor. I can't remember. I think it was Steve Kerr that said it, who's phenomenal. I mean, he's just a great guy and great basketball mind. Somebody had said that, if I remember right, somebody had said, you know, LeBron's the best athlete in the NBA, and he said he's the best athlete ever in any sport on the planet. I mean, he just a remarkable. I do think that he's, we've never seen an athlete like him, and his skill level and all that. Could he be a better shooter? Yeah, maybe. But he shoots it just fine. And the rest of the things that he does at such a high level. I don't think he defends. You know, he plays at both ends of the floor at an extraordinarily high level. You just don't see that very often, and I'm not sure we're likely to see it quite that way again.
Yeah, I guess you would say the only person athletically who was in the ballpark with him was Wilt, who neither of us saw, but everybody who was there just said that from the standpoint of pure physical gifts, it just almost wasn't fair when you put him against the rest of the guys from that generation. And LeBron kind of made me feel that way a few times in that finals, being there in person, where, you know, he's going against probably the youngest, most athletic team in the league, and he was just overpowering them, you know. And I think Oklahoma City went from, after game one, we were talking about them as a dynasty, you know, and how they had just seized control, and this was going to become Durant's league now, and LeBron just kind of sucked it out of them. By game five, they were just defeated. You know, you could see it. Like, they just didn't have an answer for this guy. I'm really interested to see if he can keep this going.
And, I think he can. I am too. I think he can. Yeah.
Let's talk about the draft because, you know, as you said, LeBron was the best high school player ever. Very easy to evaluate. I think Anthony Davis is pretty easy to evaluate. We know what we're getting here. I think he's as sure of a sure thing as anybody we've had since. Who's the last quote unquote sure thing you feel like we've had in the draft?
Wow. I mean, you know, the year that Oden and Durant came out in the same year, I thought both of those guys were sure things. You know, it was proven wrong on the Oden part. I do think it was more because of injury than anything. And, you know, I remember you saying that you thought you'd pick Durant number one, overall anyway, but I don't think that was the prevailing view in the league that whoever had one would have taken Oden. But, you know, I probably would look back to that, or maybe a Blake Griffin after that, that he was by far the number one pick. But, you know, I think Anthony Davis is the clear cut consensus number one, and there's no discussion about it. That doesn't mean I would put him in the same, category as a guy like LeBron. You know, sort of that type of player, but defensively he can be really special because of his defensive range. And like I've said this before, I mean, when I was younger, you know, I was a huge baseball fan growing up, and you know, the Dodgers seemed like they always came up against the Phillies. And when the Phillies had Gary Maddux playing center, the thing about everybody used to say about Gary Maddux was, you know, 2/3 of the earth is covered by water, the other third by Gary Maddux. And that's the way you kind of feel about Anthony Davis on a basketball floor, that his range defensively can cover so much ground. And he blocked, I think, in the neighborhood of 40 jump shots last year, including a 15 three-point shots. And that's more shots than Jared Sullinger blocked total. And those are jump shots he was blocking.
Right.
You just don't see that very often. And he's whatever it is on defense, he's got it.
Yeah, I guess the word the phrase sure thing could be interpreted a couple different ways. For me, I watched 2007 was – I really threw myself into college hoops that year because the Celtics had, you know, potentially the number one pick, and I really wanted to I became attached to Durant. And the more I watched him, the more it just made sense to me. There is just no way that this guy isn't going to be a scoring machine in the NBA. Like, he's too tall. He's too gifted. He makes decisions too quickly. It's just too easy for him. And to me, it was like a sure thing that at the very least, this guy will average between 25 and 30 in the NBA. And it seems like Davis is a sure thing in the sense that, all right, from a defense rebounding standpoint, this guy is a sure thing. He's going to come in and he's going to impact every game he plays and is probably somebody who could be one of the two best players on a championship team. Do you think that's fair?
I do, and I think he's going to get better and better offensively, because he may be somewhat slight of build, and he's going to get stronger. He's never going to be, you know, he's never going to share clothes with Dwight Howard, but his touch is really good. He can shoot it. He makes his free throws, and he's got unbelievable hands. I mean, he catches absolutely everything. So if he gets his mitts on it, he's keeping it. So I do think he's going to develop as an offensive player. He may not be your classic low post guy that's going to get deep post position and all that, but if he catches it on the move in the post, he's developing a jump hook, and I think he will get a turnaround jumper. I think he's just kind of scratching the surface of what he's going to be on the offensive end.
All right. Well, enough about Anthony Davis. Everybody knows he's going to be good. Let's get to the fun stuff. You have the number two pick. You're running the Charlotte Bobcats. Who do you take?
Somebody that's bigger than 6 feet tall at a guard spot. You know, they just picked up Ben Gordon in a trade, and they've got small guards now, you know, with Augustine and Walker and now Gordon. They've become very small at the guard. They've got to get a, they've got to get a starter. You can't get a surefire start, number two, this year. It's not like we were talking about when Durant and Oden came out that, you know, whoever has the two pick, your choice is easy. You're going to get a star. It depends on which one based on the number one pick. I would take Bradley Beal from Florida. I think he's the second best prospect in the draft. But he's, you know, none of these guys are sure things, but, Beal reminds me a lot of Ray Allen. And I think if you know, when you say that, people go, wait a minute, Ray Allen is the all-time leading three-point shooter in the league, great player and all that. How can you say that? If you compare them as 18-year-olds, if you took, cause Beal's not going to be 19 until tomorrow. On draft day, he turns 19.
Yeah.
If you put them together as 18-year-olds, and said, okay, pick between Ray Allen and Bradley Beal, I think you'd have a hard time choosing between them. I think it'd be a really tough choice. Beal is not a, he's not a crazy athlete, but he's athletic. He can rebound. I think he's got to continue to work on putting the ball on the floor and working off of pick and rolls, but he's really good and can shoot it and defend. I like him as a prospect. I think he's going to be really good.
Well, Chad seems to think, Chad and I did a big back and forth today, and Chad believed that Bill is kind of just out of position in Florida. He's playing small forward. He's not kind of, wasn't doing the things that an NBA team, if they were smart, would put him in the position to do. It was basically to do a Ray Allen impersonation. Do you buy that?
I do, and he didn't have, like, I think the guards at Florida are good. They've got small, they have small guards there too, and Kenny Boynton and Irving Walker. You put him with a really good point guard, and I think he's going to be even better.
Yeah.
But I agree with Chad. Like, Chad's really good at this stuff. I agree with him. I think, and that's why I think Beal's going to be a really good pro. But there is a question. I mean, it's not a no-brainer. I mean, you know, you can like Thomas Robinson more because he's going to be a starter and really productive, or if you know happen to really like Harrison Barnes or Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. Those aren't bad picks. It's just, you know, for me personally, and it's easy to say when you don't have a team and no skin in the game, but I would pull the trigger on Bradley Beal first.
All right, here's my counter. I think Kidd-Gilchrist is going to be the second best player in this draft. I think we make the mistake over and over again of sometimes, especially people that have, you know, either played for the championship team or played on a really visible team, you start kind of picking them apart after a while. I hate to do the cliche of all this guy does is win, but nobody cares more than you put this guy on your team and you just know the entire team is going to be more competitive, that this guy's going to do everything he could conceivably do to help you win. And also he's the kind of player that, you know, I'm judging everything in this draft based on what I just watched in that Oklahoma City Miami series, because that's where the NBA is going. It's turning into this league where you can play three different positions. You don't need a center. You have 6'5" guys protecting the rim. Everything is super fast. Everything has to be geared around how do we stop LeBron and how do we stop Durant. Doesn't this guy fit into all of those questions and thoughts and things?
He absolutely does. And you know, the winner thing is not, it's not irrelevant. But if they had lost, you know, say they had lost in the Final Four, that wouldn't change the sort of the winning equation and the label of the winner. What he does better than anybody in this draft is play hard. And Fran Fraschilla says this all the time: playing hard is a skill, and I agree with that.
Totally agree.
He's relentless, and you know, you can't. That's something Calhoun, Jim Calhoun, said this a long time. You can't teach relentless. And I think that was really well said. That you can't teach a guy to be relentless. He's got that. It's contagious. Like he makes other guys around him work harder. Last year they set up, because of Gilchrist, like a breakfast club where everybody came in early and worked out. And, you know, he brought that, he changed the culture or helped change the culture of that team. And I think he would do that, with any NBA team, that his relentless work ethic and how hard he goes after it would really help. I think the mental hurdle you have to get over is at that spot, you know, 2, 3, you expect to get scoring, and he's not a scorer. He averaged 14 on a great team. He probably could average more somewhere else. He's not a shooter. He needs to break that shot down, redo it, because he never squares the basket. His elbow's all over the place. But
all right, hold on, wait a second. We've just established this is the most competitive, relentless kid in this draft. One of those guys who lives and breathes basketball, like somebody along the lines of like a Durant. You're telling me this guy isn't going to be able to figure out how to shoot? Like, I feel like if there's ever a case of somebody who's going to be like All right, so what do I have to do? I have to make threes from these three spots. I'm going to shoot 10,000 threes a day from those three spots until I get good at this. I feel like he's there's no safer bet than him to do that.
Well, that's what, but I said he needs to. I didn't say he wouldn't or couldn't.
Right, but I'm factoring in like he will, though. I just feel like you don't have to worry about him not putting in the time to do that because he's going to do that.
That's true. And guys do get better as shooters once they get to the NBA because they have no restriction on how long they can work. But you know, part of it, too, is you know, you do have to, or at least I try to think about the fact, like, the guy's been playing for 18, 19 years, and he's had a lot of time to work on a shot, and he hasn't done it yet. And you know, I do subscribe to the Chris Mullin theory that if you've got an imperfect shot, keep shooting it till you shoot that imperfect shot perfectly.
Yeah.
You know, but I think he's going to get better as an offensive player, but that doesn't mean that I think he's going to be Dwayne Wade either. That's not the kind of player he is. He's kind of a super, you know, right now a super Gerald Wallace. He's going to give you more than that, I think, but he can guard, like you said about sort of the way the game's going, he can guard three or four positions, and he rebounds, he's great in transition, and he just attacks, he's physical, and he never backs down to anybody, and he's a great kid, he's got a great demeanor, never gives in, and it's hard to find guys that won't give in, because most games are won and lost, at some point, because somebody eventually gives in, whether it's individually or collectively.
Well, how much does age matter here? Because the thing that fascinates me about Kid Gilchrist, he's still, right now, today, 18 years old. He doesn't turn 19 until September 26, 1993. And this is a college basketball scene where usually people are like Austin Rivers, where they're a freshman, but they're 19. I think Austin Rivers might be like a year and a half older than Kid Gilchrist, something like that. So when you think about it, Kid Gilchrist really should be a college freshman heading into this season. Now, do you care about age at all? Like, Damian Lillard's going to be 22 by the time next season starts. He's 4 years older than, or 3.5 years older than Kid Gilchrist. Doesn't that matter?
It matters a little bit. I mean, it helps you, same thing I said about, you know, Brad Beal about being young, that if you, you know, compare him to Ray Allen now, it doesn't make any sense, but if you compare him as 18-year-olds, then it does. And, you know, but, heck, Michael Jordan was 21 when he came out. Things worked out pretty well for him. You know, Kobe was 18. Who knows? But the problem is you're trying to make projections on a younger guy, and you may think that a 22-year-old has reached his ceiling. Like Tyler Zeller out of North Carolina, 7-footer, is 22. So does that mean he has less room to grow as a player? I don't think that's necessarily true. He may be closer to his ceiling because of how much time he's put into the game in college. But it doesn't mean he stopped maturing, getting better, and he can't improve from here. I mean, that's been proven years and years ago. I mean, let's put it this way: if you had Andre Drummond who is in the same position you're talking about as Gilchrist, as he should probably still be. Well, he would have been in high school. He did not come out early this year to play at UConn. And you had him, and you had a senior in Tim Duncan coming out of Wake Forest. Who would you take? You know, say, well, Tim Duncan's older, you know, he's past his prime. You know, you wouldn't take that tack. You have to balance it.
I became fascinated by Avery Bradley's situation because, you know, he's in the Celtics. He turned into a real gem over the second half of the season. It was somebody that, you know, you look back over the arc of what happened to him. You know, he's in high school, heading into college, he's a top five recruit, a sure thing. He was actually ahead of John Wall. Goes to Texas for a year, doesn't have the greatest year. The whole Rick Barnes, one of my least favorite college coaches. That's another story. But doesn't have the greatest year, falls to 19 in the draft. The Celtics think he's a point guard, but really he's not. He's just a slightly undersized shooting guard who's an amazing defender. Once they finally figured that out and started playing with Rondo, his career took off. And then it seems silly that he fell to 19. So now looking at this year's draft and you look at these guys like who only a year ago were like top five, top six high school recruits and three of them are, you know, Austin Rivers, Marcus Teague, the Quincy Miller on Baylor. And then, you know, they can have one college year that can kind of nudge them a little bit too far in one direction. Are those the best value guys right now?
Yeah, and I would put Perry Jones in there as well, who, you know, according to reports, has been falling on NBA draft boards. You know, guys mature at different rates, and you may be in a situation that's not great for you. And the Celtics with Avery Bradley, you know, they do some really good work with, you know, they profile guys and study them psychologically. What kind of personality do they have? What's their makeup? And Bradley did very well for them on that. And has proven to be a really good pick. But, you know, Rondo was the same way. I mean, remember when Rondo came out? I mean, I had him rated higher than other people, but it wasn't like I had him rated in the top five. I had him in the, you know, top 15, and he went 21. And the reason was, well, he can't shoot it. Okay, it's true, he couldn't shoot it. But boy, he could do a lot of other things. And the other things that he does well have trumped the fact that he wasn't a terrific shooter. And there are guys in this, like, a guy like that that I like, and not necessarily exactly the way he plays, but the kid from Washington, Tony Roten Jr., he can't shoot it either. But you know what? He can get by you, and he can get to the bucket, and he can get to the free throw line, and he's got a big body. He's a left-hander that can really pass it. As he, you know, gets a little bit better with his offhand, his right hand, and as he works on his shot to get it to be consistent enough to make open ones and make free throws, that kid's got a lot of potential to be good. So are you going to bet on that potential, or are you going to go with something that maybe he's been more productive in his first couple years in college? That's why those guys get, that's a hard decision. And I don't know whether it's Jerry West who said it years ago, that if you get these things, if you're right 50% of the time, you're doing pretty well.
I have a weird feeling that the Celtics are going to take Tony Roten with one of those two picks, because he's very Tyreek Evans-ish, right?
Yeah, yes, but he's not, he's big and strong but he doesn't, you know, and like Evans didn't shoot it particularly well coming out of high school or his first year in college. And, you know, people say, well, he's a little bit wild. He turns the ball over. I'd kind of rather dial a guy down than have to beg him to speed up. And he does make some mistakes, but I think he can mature there. You know, he's another kid, he's a young kid. His mother was a sprinter. His father played football. And so he's got a great athletic background. And the kid can really pass it. I mean, he was the best passer coming out of high school last year, and really extraordinary in that way. And who else did you mention? Like Quincy Miller. Miller was hurt. He had an ACL injury last year, and so when he came back from it, you know, he had an okay year, had some good games. You know, he's got a low release point on that shot. He shoots it right in front of his forehead.
I don't like his jump shot. You know why I don't like it? Because it reminds me of my own jump shot. There's not a lot of lift, and he kind of shoots it from a weird angle, and it's hard to imagine him like in the NBA Finals shooting that over Shane Battier.
Yeah, but those guys don't have to be. You're starting to, like, at this point in the draft when you're talking in the 20s.
Yeah, you're taking flyers.
Yeah, those guys don't, not so much flyers, but you don't have to get a star. You're looking for who's the guy that can really help you. Does he have a specialized skill?
Yeah.
And this kid's really athletic and very, very skilled. But he's slight of build and all that. He needs some time. But if you stick with him and believe in him, yeah, he's got a chance to be pretty good.
Yeah, with the Celtics with Roten, the reason I was wondering maybe they'd take a flyer on him is Danny loved Tyreek Evans a couple years ago, and it seems like it's a similar type of situation where we're not totally sure he's a point guard. He's a better passer than Evans was. I don't know if he's quite as explosive, but kind of one of those, you're basically betting on the athlete more than how he projects. And another person, when we're talking about like high school recruits and how stock can kind of get a little wonky, Austin Rivers was, it was Davis, Gilchrist, and Rivers in some order as the top three recruits a year ago. He went to Duke, didn't have a terrible season. I feel like it was a little overblown that, you know, I know he went from a chemistry standpoint, he wasn't fantastic. He made some big shots. I don't know how fun he is to play with. I don't feel like he damaged his stock that irrevocably, and yet he's drifted out of the top 10. You're a Duke guy. Do you agree with this?
I think he's going to be taken in the top 10. I think there are people out there who really like him. I'm one of them. You know, I can't say, you know, I wasn't there every day about the great teammate stuff. I tend to look at that as, you know, when some guy, they say, well, he's a great teammate, he play well with others, you got to look at the others too. And he played on a team where he was the only guy that could get his own shot. And everybody else was dependent upon coming off a screen to get something. And he didn't play with a great point guard. And so that was you put him with Kyrie Irving, you're looking at a totally different player in my judgment.
Yeah, and also, I mean, isn't it fair to say it was basically just a bunch of shooting guards all kind of taking turns dribbling the ball over midcourt. That was the Duke offense.
That was part of it, but you know, those other guards, Seth Curry and Andre Dawkins, were catch and shoot guys. They were not guys that were going to get their own shot. And so it did come down to, at times, Austin Rivers having to create something for them to get a shot. They didn't have a point guard that was can create things for others, where in that drive and kick offense. And they didn't, you know, the other guys couldn't drive and kick. You know, they were catch and shoot. And so it was a different offensive scheme for them and different personnel. And I'm not bothered by, you know, people say, well, he's cocky and he's a diva and all that stuff. I'm not bothered by cocky. I think that's good. You want a guy who believes in himself, and Rivers does. You know, now I do think he has to become a little bit more aware when he's coming off a ball screen of the options that he's got, because he's thinking score all the time. But he's another guy, an 18, 19 year old kid. And 1 year in high or college, you know, is not a career. He's got a lot. He's the best with the ball in this draft. He can get his own shot. He can get by people into the lane. You know, the question with him is he going to be able to play the point? And I think he can make the adjustment and initiate offense and all that. But the same, you know, people have the same question about Westbrook. The difference is Russell Westbrook is a far superior athlete. I mean, he's a super dynamic athlete. You just don't see those guys very often. But I think Austin's going to have a really good NBA career, especially if he plays with a good point guard.
I actually agree with you. And I think your worst case scenario for his career is Jason Terry. Like, at the very least, he's going to be an irrational confidence six man for a good team. Somebody who can come in and swing a game and get hot and, more importantly, have total confidence that he's the best guy on the floor, even though he's not. The things that intrigue me about him, and I've watched him the last couple of years because he's Doc's son and I just, you know, was interested in him. He's 25 foot range. Even though it doesn't, you wouldn't call him like an unbelievable athlete like a Tariq Evans, it always seems like he can get by people whenever he wants, which is a skill. And also he's been carrying himself as the best guy since what, age 13? Like, that's gotta matter a little bit when you've, like, the quote unquote alpha dog from eighth grade on. Like, you have a certain confidence after a while. I don't know. If he slips out of the top 10, I think that's a mistake.
I don't think he will, but if he does, that's good news for somebody because they're going to get a steal. The other guy is Jeremy Lamb. That, you know, somebody's going to have to fall out of the top 10. But you know, I had Lamb rated seventh overall on that best available list I do, and you know, you keep hearing he's falling and this guy's falling, all that stuff, because you know, people say that Terrence Ross is really the kid from Washington, the shooter.
Yeah.
But I think Lamb's another guy that's going to be really good. He's got a sleepy look on his face, and he gets criticized for that a little bit. And he played on not a dysfunctional team, but you know, a team that didn't fit together particularly well last year with UConn. And I think the kid's going to be a good NBA player. Same thing with Deion Waiters. But it's how good are they going to be stars? And because that's what we're looking for. We're looking for guys that are going to be, you know, either all stars or near all star players. And you know, a few of these guys have. Somebody's going to be an all-star caliber player outside of Anthony Davis in this thing. It's just a question of, you know, which ones. And we know some of them aren't going to make it, and they're not going to be as good as we think they're going to be. And you know, the trick is avoiding those guys.
Well, one of the goofy things about this draft, there's a lot of guys who I would say aren't going to be all-stars, but also I think could be top seven guys on a really good team. You know, which it seems like the draft is especially deep with those guys. Like you mentioned Terrence Ross, who I will be the first one to admit I did not remember watching in college, but did I pound the YouTube clips for Terrence Ross. The type of guy who succeeds in 2013, you know, he has two skills. He can guard people in the wing and he can shoot threes. I know that kind of player could play in the 2012 finals that I just watched. So I feel like he is actually going to be going a little higher than maybe we expect. Who else do you see kind of sneaking up and being one of those guys who gets taken four picks higher than everybody expects?
Ross is one, and you know, according to guys like Chad and Rick Bucher and Andy Katz and guys like that, they say that that's happening with him. The other guy is Damian Lillard from Weber State. You know, he was kind of a 10, you know, around the 10 spot, and you could see him going maybe as high as six because you know, Portland really values guys like that, that are high character guys, that, you know, he's a good athlete and really good, he can really score and play the point, and unselfish kid that can pass. You know, the only question with Lillard is, you know, he hasn't played against the highest level of competition. And when you say that, doesn't mean you go to small school, you haven't played against anybody. But in his career at Weber State, he never played against a top 25 team. And that's hard to believe. And, that, you know, his team never went to the NCAA tournament, which I don't think is that big of a deal, because a big part of that was he didn't have really high level teammates, but
yeah.
The kid can really score, and I think he's going to be a good NBA player. But, you know, some of these things you don't know. You're going on what you believe rather than, you know, some sort of body of work that is incontrovertible.
One of the things that I think is going to happen, I think, you know, there's a bunch of centers that Tyler Zeller is somebody that, people think could go ninth or 10th, and same for that Myers Leonard, who was, you know, at Illinois for a year. I think those guys are going to drop, because again, going back to the whole premise of everyone judging this draft by what they just witnessed in the finals, like, does Tyler Zeller play 1 minute in the 2012 finals? It's like, serious question. Do you think he plays a minute in that series?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think he gets in, based upon what, you know, the way those two teams play. You know, I do think if Miami had a guy like Zeller, they would have played him, so he would have played during the season. So I think he would have. I mean, I like Zeller. I'm not as sold on Leonard. Leonard's a better athlete. I like Zeller more simply because he can really run. Like, that dude can really run. And he can rebound. He's not a shot blocker, but he's a good post defender. Gets deflections. He gets around in front and can knock it away. And he can, you know, he can make a shot. You know, all the things you talk about with Leonard, this kid can do. Andre Drummond's the guy that kind of, I don't know what to make of, because he's got everything that you would want in a player, except he's so raw offensively that it kind of gives you the willies. Like, he doesn't really score efficiently, and he can't make a free throw. He shot 29% from the free throw line, but he's such a physical freak that you're going, how do you turn that down? You know, he's one of those guys that gets you fired if you take him, gets you fired if you, and could get you fired if you don't, because he's got that kind of wild swing as to how, you know, how this could go for him.
Yeah, there's two guys like that. He's the one who will get taken in the top eight. And then I think Perry Jones is in that next section of the guy. It's so tough for these GMs. They look at they watch the video, they watch the guy work out, and they're just kind of blown away by how athletic they are. And yet it hasn't translated into winning basketball games. And how do you know? You know, I think Perry Jones is going to, I know everybody's saying he's dropping. I think once people are actually on the clock, I think he gets taken. I really don't see him dropping out of the top half of the draft. I just can't imagine it happening. Like, have there been 10 athletes in the draft as athletic as this guy?
Yeah, it's hard to imagine that he would. Like, I had him rated 10th, I think, and for him to go, you know, kind of in the middle of the first round seems crazy, but you know, he's 2 years at Baylor. His numbers didn't change at all from one year to the next. You know, 13 points, eight and a half rebounds, whatever it was. And with that athleticism and skill level, you know, more has been expected and more will be expected of him. But it just strikes me as being a little bit odd that, you know, kind of he drops, and Mo Harkless from St. John's, who has had 1 year, but is operating off of, you know, he's got a chance to get so much better. You know, I can't imagine he would be taken ahead of Perry Jones, but you never know. I mean, I'm not saying Harkless isn't a good player. He is, and has a chance to be very good. And is a great kid. They're both great kids, but I tend to think that Jones, has more, than Harkless, and Harkless has got to get more to catch up to Jones. So I would take Jones first.
The Harkless thing's funny because, like, Chad keeps calling him a young Trevor Ariza. Trevor Ariza's been on six teams.
I don't know if that's totally enticing me.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Perry Jones, at least I know, you know, it seems like the big question for him is both motivation and laying it all on the table. Like, there was that weird story about him the other day that his vertical leap, he's got some crazy vertical leap, but he only jumped that high twice. He told the guy who was measuring it during the entire season. He's like, why'd you only jump twice? It's like, it's in my reserve tank or whatever. It's like, what? You have a reserve tank? So I don't know what to make of that guy. Though I like Terrence Jones. I think he's another guy who's kind of slipped under the cracks. You know, you get lost on those teams where you have all these first round picks, and I think had he had a different college experience, maybe he gets the ball more, maybe you notice him more. I always thought, I know his motor, which is one of the draft code words, I know his motor is under question. I always thought he played hard. Like, I always judge these guys by, would I want to go to war with these guys in a road game in the playoffs? I feel like I would go to war with Terrence Jones. What do you think?
I agree. I mean, I think he's still maturing. You know, he butted heads with Calipari a little bit, and John did a great job with him, getting him to understand that he needs to play hard all the time, including in practice, and he turned him into more of a blue collar player his second year, where he actually went out and rebounded and defended at a higher level and more consistently. I think the issue is, he's not a, and this goes defensively as well as offensively, he's not really a three, and I'm not sure he's a prototypical four, but he can stretch the floor, he can drive it, he's a left-handed kid, and he can make a shot. He's a little bit unorthodox in his shooting motion, but I like him a lot. He's productive. He's a little bit, I don't know whether high maintenance is the right word, but you got to stay on him a little bit. But as he gets older, and gets in the league and learns what it means to be a real professional, I like him. And, but the problem is, like, where do you slot him in this thing? You know, I've got him ranked, I think, 15th overall, give or take. I can't remember exactly where, but right around the middle of the first round. And, people say, well, he should have come out last year. He would have been a higher pick. Maybe, but he's more prepared now than he would have been last year. He's a much better player this year than he was last year at this time. They may be saying that based just on draft position, but, at the end of the day, who really cares? At the end of his career, they're not going to say he should have come out his first year if he turns out to be as good a player as he can be.
I need your quick thoughts on a couple guys. Kendall Marshall, too slow to make it?
Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah, I think he'll make it, but is he going to be an elite level point guard? With his foot speed, staying in front of people is going to be a problem, and getting by people off the dribble is going to be a problem. In full court situations, he'll be terrific, but I think he's probably a backup guard.
Oh, backup guard.
What's wrong with that? You can make a lot of money as a backup.
Yeah, true. I mean, if you're taking him in the 20s and you're the ninth best guy on a team, that's pretty much what you should expect from a first rounder in your 20s. I think put a shot blocker behind him who can protect him. Maybe his destiny will be a little different.
He'll play in the league and play well. I mean, I like him very much, but how many like kind of slow footed point guards are there doing really well in the league? There aren't that many.
Everybody can only talk. Andre Miller just gets, that's like the default example because nobody can think of anybody else really. Royce White, who I've been on the bandwagon really for the last month. I feel like I've built the bandwagon, really hoping that he would fall to the Celtics at 21 or 22. I have this sinking feeling that he's going to get taken before that because he's so talented. And by the way, I don't care about the anxiety disorder, doesn't love flying, all that stuff. Like, the kid's 21. Like, he's not the person he's going to be 4 years from now. If the Celts could get him at 21, I would be over the moon. I don't think it's going to happen. What do you think?
I like him a lot. I don't know enough about, sort of the anxiety disorder and what goes into that. You know, he did have some off-court issues when he's at Minnesota before he went to Iowa State. But Fred Hoiberg has said, his coach at Iowa State has said he was great the 2 years he was there and really good in the community, all that stuff. You have to satisfy yourself, and those teams do that, all those issues are squared away. But as a player, people have compared him to Anthony Mason. He's probably more skilled than Mason was.
I agree. I think he's more Antoine Walker.
Yeah, like that's probably right. Not as good of a shooter. Because he doesn't shoot the ball particularly well, but boy, guy that can be kind of a point forward and, operate around the elbow for you. He can be really intriguing, really good. I don't know that he's kind of an all-star caliber player, but you'd be taking him, around 15 or so. And some people would take him even higher than that. I agree with you. I'd be surprised if you're around at 21. That's about where I have him on the list. But I did factor in some of the, because I just don't know what the anxiety disorder entails. I did put him at 20, 21 on my list just because of that, and I didn't know enough about it.
Well, I'm resigned to the fact that he's probably going to get taken before the Celtics. And then on the flip side, Jared Sullinger really might fall to the Celtics. It's a polarizing question right now with Celtic fans because he's basically a much better version of what Big Baby Davis gave the Celtics for the last 3 years, but he's got this back issue. The Celtics just went through, they had different guys with heart problems, guys missing a year, all that stuff. Like, taking another injury risk guy isn't exactly ideal. Would you take, at what point in the draft does the Sullinger reward risk thing just shift to reward for you? What number?
It depends on what else is available. You know, if you have something in the same, you know, sort of the same ballpark, without the back problem, like that back problem, I don't think is, anything to mess with. You know, I heard his dad, who's a great guy, you know, Satch Sullinger, say, well, with yoga and a little bit of weight loss, you know, yoga is for guys our age that are trying to play golf a little bit longer, not for a guy trying to play in the NBA. You'd have to have your doctor's pass on it, but that would give me some pause. Even though I love Sullinger as a player, like I think he knows how to play. He really understands the game at a high level. But you know, his lack of athleticism it would be an issue for me. Like, he doesn't elevate over size inside to score. He doesn't defend. He doesn't block shots, but he does rebound. He rebounds at a really high rate, and he's a heck of a teammate. But the fact that he has a problem scoring over people at that level, I think would give me a little bit of pause. I would hesitate on that.
Wow, man, now I'm really depressed.
I don't know. Maybe he will be gone there because I've got him rated like 13th or 14th because I didn't factor in the back with him. That's something I left to a doctor. It's funny. I don't mind factoring in obsessive compulsive disorder, but
right.
I left it to somebody else to deal with the back issue. That probably doesn't square. But he's a heck of a player, but he's undersized and not a great athlete, and he does have he has had a little bit of a weight issue. And you know, that hadn't always worked out in the player's favor over the long term. But now, you know, now that I say that, it'll probably be Charles Barkley.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would argue that the weight issue thing is sometimes that's sometimes how you get the best value, because then these teams get these guys in their complexes and they change their diets. And, you know, Big Baby was somebody that was, nobody thought he was even going to play a meaningful minute in the league, you know, and he ended up being the key bench guy on the 2010 team. Harrison Barnes, I don't understand how he's drifted back into a spot where he might actually go fourth here. I thought we had all agreed that this guy was missing something. What changed?
I think what changed was in part the combine. Like, for me, I'll tell you what it was for me. When I saw him in high school, I thought, you know, I kind of bought into the Kobe Bryant thing. Not that he was going to be as good as Kobe Bryant, but that he was an elite athlete and had an unbelievable skill level, great kid, great head on his shoulders, all that stuff. And when he played at Carolina, like, look, this guy's been a really good player. He's been an All-America caliber player. But I didn't think he was as good of an athlete as he was in high school. I thought, geez, I missed on that. I thought he was a better athlete than this. Then he goes to the combine and tested literally off the charts. 38-inch standing vertical, which that doesn't happen. And he was the most agile and mobile player there. The fat, you know, speed, agility was equally off the charts. And, you know, what that kind of tells you is he is that elite level athlete, but he thinks too much. He's kind of a process-oriented kid. I think he's got a chance when he gets up to the NBA, where the rules are a little bit different. He'll be in a different system, where he's got a chance to be a better pro than a college player. Now, I could certainly be wrong there. You know, this is a, you know, you hope an educated guess, but it's a guess. But even without being better, being as good as his college career suggests is pretty darn good and worthy of a, you know, I think worthy of a top five pick because of his length, athleticism, his skill level. He needs to work on a few things. Fran Fraschilla pointed out he doesn't like his footwork. You know, that he doesn't do a jab step the way Fran likes and all that stuff. I'm not as bothered by that, because I think he can really shoot it. And I think you put him with a really good point guard when he was with Kendall Marshall, you know, he blossomed. I think he'll do the same with a really good point guard in the NBA. And if he winds up going to Cleveland, like say Cleveland keeps its pick and they stay at four and he's available and Brad Beal's gone, that'd be a heck of a thing for Barnes, and it'd be pretty good for Cleveland.
All right, so it seems like Davis goes first, obviously. It really seems like Charlotte and Cleveland are going to flip picks. Just getting that feeling.
I've heard that. I don't know that to be true, but I've heard that.
It seems like, so Cleveland moves up, they take Bradley Beal second. Then DC at three. Man, I don't know, because it seems like they need a shooter. They don't need another, like, I don't know what they do there. And then, regardless of how it plays out, it seems like the first five picks are probably going to be Beal, Barnes, Kidd Gilchrist, Robinson, Thomas Robinson, and Davis, which means Drummond now falls out of the top five. Portland, everybody thinks, is going to take Damian Lillard. So now Drummond's sitting there at seven for Golden State.
Yeah, do you take Waiters or him? That's a tough call.
Oof. Drummond could fall now to... It seems like I can't see Golden State taking him. Maybe they trade the pick. I don't know what they do. But because of Drummond's talent, it's a weird thing. I don't feel like he goes lower than seven, but I don't think Golden State takes him. Like, don't you think at that point somebody moves up and rolls the dice with the Andre Drummond era? Right?
That's a safe prediction. The information guys, you know, Bucher and Broussard and Katz and all those guys, Chad Ford, have been talking about Houston really liking Andre Drummond and working to try to get him. So, you know, who knows? I mean, I have heard a lot of our guys say that they feel like this is going to be as volatile a draft as we've had on the trade front and maneuvering. But you know, the truth is I hear that just about every year.
Right.
but this year it may be true.
Last two questions. One, who's your favorite later round pick?
You mean like a kind of a second round guy?
No, like in like the 18 to 33 range. Somebody that you just love and you think is going to shove it in everyone's face.
Tony Roden is the guy I would say.
Wow.
If he lasts that long. I really like him. I think he's got a chance to be really good. I don't know that, you know, throw it back in everybody's face. I don't know that there's anybody there that you say, sure thing. The last time I remember somebody being taken in the 20s that I thought, you know, this guy's going to be, you know, how could he last that long? And the truth is I pitched a hissy fit on the air about it when the Knicks took that kid from South Carolina, and I'm forgetting his name now, but Rondo was still on the board.
Oh, Rinaldo Bachmann.
Rinaldo Bachmann. You know, I pitched a fit. You know, I was probably a jerk about it, but I pitched a fit on the air going, how could you take him when he's a second-round talent? How could you do that when Rondo's on the board?
Yeah.
I felt like Rondo was going to be really good. Honestly, though, Bill, I didn't think he'd be this good, but I thought he'd be really good.
Yeah.
Roden reminds me of that, and maybe I'm kind of I'm comparing it too much to that year and probably overthinking it, but I compare Roden to Rondo in that way that, you know, we're getting hung up on the fact that he doesn't shoot it particularly well, and he may have a couple of turnover issues here or there, but I think he's got a real chance to be good.
Oh, good, because I really have a legitimate feeling that the Celtics are going to end up with him. I also thought it was interesting in ESPN the magazine, they had the players from each team, that one player from each team made the pick. They had a mock draft, which didn't totally work out because Bradley Beal went 19th. So I'm going to say that was a failure. But Avery Bradley picked Tony Roten and made it seem like they were kind of boys, and he just thought he was a total sleeper, all this stuff. I got kind of excited. Last question, and this is really the biggest question of the podcast. Your favorite wingspan in this year's draft?
Andre Drummond. You know, my dream scenario would be if Anthony Davis, John Henson and Andre Drummond go 1, 2, and 3, because with the Jay Billis wingspan drinking game,
yeah,
everybody would be on the floor by the fourth pick. It would be bad for our viewership, but we would have everybody in the emergency room in pretty short order.
John Henson, that's some wingspan on John Henson.
Yeah, exactly. They've all, you know, when Davis gets drafted, I may just say, you know, wingspan, just to get people liquored up as quickly as possible.
Maybe it's probably like the 9 or 10 year anniversary of when you really started pushing wingspan into America's forefront. You might need to, maybe you tweak it. Maybe you come up with a new word for somebody with crazy, crazy wingspan.
Well, I think I told you this last time we talked that, I can't remember how many years ago this was, 3-4 years ago when I heard about this drinking game. I went an entire draft without saying long, length, or wingspan.
What? I still don't believe that happened.
That's absolutely true. Go back and look. I don't remember the year. I'll figure it out. But I said linear extent and space and stuff like that. People are like, what is he talking about? And that was the only reason, so I could avoid saying those words. And, you know, and everybody would have all their liquor available and wouldn't be able to drink it because I wouldn't play along.
Here's my suggestion. You don't have to use it, but you know the person who had the biggest wingspan of all time is Freddy Krueger in Nightmare on Elm Street. His arms, he could extend his arms like 15 feet either way. I think you just drop a Krueger reference. I think you just say, and Davis just full Krueger. You don't even elaborate on it.
That is a guarantee. That will happen. That will happen on the draft.
You just say full Krueger, and people either get it or they don't. And the ones who get it will know that you were talking about legendary wingspan.
That's a guarantee.
Last question. That's like, what is it like? You're on TV basically for what, 8-9 straight hours tomorrow?
Yeah.
So what's your caffeine situation? Are you a caffeine guy?
I do. I drink coffee beforehand and you know a Coke or two during the draft. You know the problem is you can't get up and use the can.
So you can't at all. You can't ever go to the bathroom.
No.
Really?
What was that old movie? It was like with Chris Christopherson, Burt Reynolds, was like Semi-Tough, where you know he had something he could relieve himself in.
Oh, yeah.
Went down his pant leg or something. I may have to do that because I am getting older, and you know at my age, being a regular guy takes on a whole different meaning. But
wait a second, let's talk about this. You can't go because it's too far away, because you'll get besieged? Like what are the reasons you can't go?
You're wired into the set. So you have those, like that Madonna headset on, and so if you leave, I mean, I could probably sneak out during the second round because there's so many, you know, there are more commercials in the second round than the first.
Yeah.
But in the first round, which seems to take forever, there's no way you could get up and leave. I mean, it's not like the NFL draft. I mean, those guys are there. That's a death march for those guys. So,
well, you know,
by comparison, you can't complain.
You know what Kuiper does? He actually pees on himself. I'm not even kidding. People don't know about that. It's one of the things that's made him great over the years. He just goes, wets himself. He doesn't care.
I've been accused of that, but it hasn't happened yet. You never know.
The good thing for you this year, not a lot of, I would say, no confusing foreign names to pronounce. Like you really left out.
Fran Fraschilla is depressed about that.
What happens to Fran
all the
this
foreign
year?
Guys, but yeah, there's only that kid Evan Fournier is expected to go in the first round, but there'll be a bunch of guys taken in the second round. It's still an NBA thing to take a guy and park him overseas and all that stuff. So there'll be a fair amount in the second round, I would think.
All right, Jay, we'll see you tomorrow on ESPN. I think the coverage starts at 7 p.m. Eastern time, one of my favorite days of the year. I will have the laptop out. I will be typing as you talk, and hopefully you'll say a whole bunch of things that will make my diary a little bit more fun.
Freddy Krueger, I will say. I promise you that.
Yeah, no pressure. All right. Good luck, brother. Tomorrow. We'll talk to you soon.
Enjoyed
thank
it.
You.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
We'd like to thank you for listening to today's show. For more great podcasts, check out the Pod Center page at ESPNradio.com.
Okay.